Rencontre mondiale du logiciel libre Bordeaux 2010.
Okay, so good afternoon. My name is Samuel Thibault. I will talk about mechanisms for accessibility. So it's something that is not very well known from an operating system point of view. So I will detail things like how to access the screen, etc. So the outline will be, I will first introduce a bit about accessibility, because probably you don't know much about that topic. Then detail a bit about the hardware, which hardware we can use. Then I will detail a lot the software part, so the layers and interfaces that are used for accessibility. And finally, I will talk about how to bootstrap, which is almost a design and a user interface problem, but also an operating system problem. So first, what is accessibility? It's also called A11Y, so it's the usual contraction, you know, I18N for internationalization. It's because it starts with an I and finishes with an N, and you have 18 letters in between, and A11Y is the same, it's accessibility. So that means making software usable by, well, disabled people, but actually anybody on Earth. So the obvious people who are concerned are blind people, but there are a lot of other disabilities, like people who have sight impairments, and not necessarily completely blind, but some problems. Some people who are deaf. So, for instance, games which rely on being able to hear what is happening to not get killed is a problem. Colorblind, it's probably not well known. How many people, well, who is colorblind in this room? There's nobody. That's really strange. There is 8% of male people who are colorblind. So that's quite a lot, actually. Women are quite fortunate that they are not much affected by this. Some people just have one hand. And so the usual keyboard is not really suited to that. So what they do is using a special layout which has a toggle key, so that when they toggle, they actually have the other half of the keyboard under the finger. So they don't have to move the hand from the left part to the right part and vice versa. They just need to toggle to get the other half of the keyboard. Finger-handed, so some people just are just able to move a finger or something similar to a finger. They would use joysticks to like use a mouse, but with a joystick. Eye-handed people, so I would just show a bit about Dasha. So I have a mouse here which actually follows my eye. And I can quite easily type things by just looking at letters. For instance, hello. I'm looking for the comma. Oh, sorry. I can't find it. Here it is. And what you see is that the word, for instance, here we see U, Y-O-U, quite clearly, because statistically in the English language, when you start with a Y, often you want to put a no right after that. And so you actually see the words forming. It's really a fun thing. And it's quite efficient for typing things. Cognition. It's some people even say that it's a bit of a taboo, but there are, of course, a lot of problems with cognitions, be it, well, you're a bit lost in an interface with a lot of buttons and things like this, or you just cannot read what is on the screen, and so you need images to be able to use software. And elderly people who have, well, a bit of everything that is above, so of course it's difficult for them. I really invite you to have a look at the accessibility how-tos, because they have a quite detailed description of different kinds of disabilities and solutions for these. It's quite old, like 2002, but it's still quite accurate. Things haven't really changed since then in that regard. So, let's talk about hardware. Well, there was a talk about how to make a free Braille device the other day by Mario Long. I will just detail on the hardware itself. So, of course, there is Braille input and output for blind people. Some other people like speech synthesis. You can use joysticks, which basically replace the mouse, so there's not much to say about it. Press button are interesting in that you have a virtual keyboard on the screen, and with the press button, you can, with some timing, you press the button to scroll the rows of the keyboard, and then stop to say, I select that row, and then the columns are scrolling, and then you stop with another click, and then you can validate to say, yes, it's this key that I want to press. It's quite slow with an adaptive on-screen keyboard, which just shows the important parts of the of what is shown on the screen. On the virtual keyboard, it can be quite efficient, but it's a bit hard, but yes, it makes it possible to really do a lot of things with really small capabilities. Eye tracking, I've talked about it and shown the dasher. One important thing to understand is that there's no one technology that's perfect. Braille is not perfect in that a lot of people can't read Braille, especially when they got blind. While being old, they cannot make the effort to learn this, or they just can't feel it with their fingers. Braille devices are really expensive. I will detail a bit about it. Speech synthesis itself can replace Braille, but it's not perfect either. You might be in a train or in the tram. It's also sometimes considered as slow compared to Braille. There is also a problem of accuracy with Braille. You can quickly check, for instance, when you're coding, the opening braces and parentheses. With speech synthesis, it's a bit difficult. It's a burden. So I'll focus a bit on Braille. This is a Braille cell. It uses the piezo effect, that is, you have these bars which can actually bend when you apply some voltage, and so they push or lower the dots that are above it. And that way, with 8 piezo bars and 8 dots, you can actually form what we call a Braille pattern. So 8 dots, which basically is like one character. I will detail a bit more about it later. So Braille devices is just a collection of these cells, like 40 or 20 cells. They can be connected to a PC, a standard PC, via a serial USB or Bluetooth. The thing is, the price, when you look at the market, is like 150 times the number of cells euros. And that means that, no, I don't have the slides for this. A standard 40 cells Braille display is like 5,000 euros, which is way more expensive than the laptop you actually run software on. So that's why we had a talk about a free Braille device to try to cut that price a bit. About Braille, I'd like to describe a bit because it's really not well known, generally speaking. So you have 8 dots. That means 256 patterns only, 2 power 8. The thing is, only 8, the letters from A to Z are world standard. There are even exceptions, for instance, in Vietnamese for the D letter. The rest depends on the language. So for instance, colon is not the same in US and in French. In English and in French. So when you are given, for instance, a card with something printed in Braille, you might not even be able to read it just because you don't know US Braille or things like this. It also depends on the country. It has now converged, but the French Belgium, the French Canadian, and French Braille were a bit diverse before. So it was a bit of a mess. And it also depends on the usage. Because actually the French Braille changed a few times, like in 1998 and 2007, something like this. So there are old people who know the old version, young people who know the new version, and it's a bit of a mess. Some devices have their own table, so that the user is used to that table and not the official country table. And also there's quite a few problems with multi-language documents. A French person would prefer to read English with the French table because it's used to see columns with the French table. But for Japanese, on the other hand, well, he would need the Japanese table because there is no Japanese encoding for in French. So now, to get a bit more precise, but what we mean for a Braille table, there are two levels, basically. So you have grade 0, which is also called the integral, literal, the principle is that for each cell, each cell codes for one character, so you actually have a bijection between the character and the cell, which makes things really simple. In particular, when you have an 8-bit car set, it's a mere bijection between the car set you're using and the space of Braille buttons. So for instance, I showed A, B, C, and quotes. But then when you are moving to Unicode and have several languages in the same document, well, you have ambiguity. And that's not a solvable problem without some markers to say, well, now this is English, now this is French, etc. Now you have the second level, which is grade 1 or 2. It's also called abbreviated or contracted. It's actually like when you're writing with Latin letters, usual, for instance, suffixes are contracted in just a few cells. So you see ation, which is a common suffix of English words, is contracted into just these two cells. The problem, of course, is that then you have ambiguity. This Asian suffix is then coded the same way as capital N. But it was chosen in a way that it's usually not a problem. And of course, these rules depend a lot on the language and practice. So, that was for the hardware. Let's talk about software. I just want to talk a bit about dedicated software. So for instance, there is EDBrowse, which is a browser for blind people. Generally, I think it's not a good idea because EDBrowse started to implement JavaScript. It surely doesn't implement Flash. I guess it supports the tables. CSS probably not supported. Well, you cannot do everything yourself. You should really reuse just what is existing. Another example is an Office suite. We need OpenOffice compatibility, but well, you don't want to write the code to read an OpenOffice document, etc. Another reason to just use the existing application is working together. When you are blind, you usually work with non-blind people, and when you are working with them, you're next to each other on the computer, and so you, it's better to just use the same software so you understand each other. And also, to get information and documentation, you have a lot more documentation on OpenOffice to do this and that than on EDBrowse. So it's probably, it makes more sense to use what exists. Now, the problem is how to make it accessible. So first, I would like to make a quick summary of the current state. Text mode is generally quite well accessible in that it's just text, so you can render it. It's not so much a problem. But all the beginners would say, well, it's not easy to use. I don't want to learn all these commands. So they would rather use GNOME, which starts being accessible. It started like a decade ago, a bit less than that, but there is still a long road to go, particularly compared to the Windows world, which started decades ago, and which is much more advanced than what we have in Linux. But that being said, the current state is really that you can use GNOME desktop at work, for instance, to work with people working on OpenOffice documents and all this. So it can be better, but it's already quite usable. So now about the mechanism for, say, GNOME accessibility. The general principle is that, well, you have the usual pipeline starting from the application. You have an abstract representation of the application things that should be appear on the screen, and then you have a visual rendering. What accessibility does is just adding something along the abstract representation so that there is a registry to know the list of applications which are here, and a screen reader can access to the abstract representation of each application and then render this on any kind of accessibility device you might want, be it Braille, speech, or any other thing. So for instance, in the case of Linux, it's quite simple. So you have Linux with the virtual consoles. You have several applications running on VT1, VT2, VT3. And what Linux provides, and it was, I think, really meant for accessibility, /dev/VCSA, which just basically provides the text. And that's all. And that's all we need, actually, for a text mode thing. And then Braille TTY is a screen reader which reads that and uses some drivers to show this on the screen on the Braille device. There's one additional thing about when the Braille device has a keyboard, you want to simulate the effect of the key press in Linux, just like you had pressed on the real PC keyboard. That is done via some IOCTL on the virtual terminal device. So it's called TIOCSTI. It's a long story, I guess. Or you can use the uInput module of Linux to actually make like you have a fake keyboard and you write the key. The interesting thing is that the IOCTL way needs a string, while the uInput way needs a key number. The huge difference is that here the The key has been translated already, so this is really an A that the application will get. While there, the U input way, you have key A, which means the key that is labeled A on the QWERTY keyboard. So if you have an AZERTY keyboard, actually after the U input module, it will get translated into Q if the keyboard is QWERTY, is AZERTY, sorry. This is actually needed when the user has an AZERTY keyboard on his device or whatever. That's something we added quite recently, actually. Another way to achieve similar things is to use PTYs. So you have a TTY at the top, which can be a Linux virtual console or an Xterm, whatever. And you start YAS, or which means yet another screen reader, which starts a pseudo TTY in which the real application can run. And so basically, YAS acts as a filter, and it just copies in both ways, but get the text along this and can then produce speech. So it's quite portable, but then it has to interpret everything. That means all TTY escapes and things like this. The question then, when you have text, you have a big matrix of text, is what to show? Well, what people do usually in screen readers is showing what the cursor is on. So it works quite great with a shell, for instance. So here I have a shell. So when I'm typing, the Braille device is actually following what's happening. So see, I'm at the end of the Braille line, and then it switches to the next part of the line. Also, if I run MUT, for instance, you can see that it follows the cursor in that. In MUT, we made we had the developers put the cursor on the line that is currently selected, because else it's just a highlight and that is hard to track. So you see the cursor is at the end of the line, and so when I'm moving, the screen reader is actually updating automatically. You don't need anything to do. I show also a mixer, which does the same. Basically, you have the cursor here. And when I switch to the right part of the screen, then it follows as well. So it's really neat. So this means that if you want to make your text application quite accessible, just put the cursor where it should be. Even when, for instance, in MUT, you wouldn't like to show it, still put it somewhere that makes sense. Now, about graphical accessibility. It's a long story that started 20 years ago, maybe. I can't remember. Mercator, at the time, was working with, for instance, XEdit, which was sending text to the X server and then rendered in the X server. So Mercator could actually get the text directly on say, the cable between applications and the X server. The problem is that nowadays, if you run gedit, which uses GTK to render the text, which uses the Pango rendering library, which gets the text and transforms it to pixmaps before sending to the X server. And so Mercator gets just pixmaps, and it would have to do some OCR to actually get the text. And that's not something that really can work. So what is being done, what is currently working in Linux is directly get the text from the GTK layer, where it still is text and not just pixmaps. So that's the same principle as I exposed before. You have an accessibility bus here, which permits orc the screen reader to get the text from the application and output the way it prefers. So to summarize, A lot of applications are already accessible. So console are mostly accessible. There are a few exceptions, but mostly it's quite quite okay. GTK, because people have implemented an automatic way of presenting the abstract representation from the what the application wants, a button, a screen box, etc. KDE does the same, but it's not yet connected to the standard accessibility bus. So it's really soon now, since 4 years. But well, we hope that it will happen, yes, within maybe the year or two. Adobe made quite good work at making his Acrobat Reader accessible. It's really neat that a proprietary software really did it. And the rest is basically not so accessible. For instance, KDE3 didn't have that infrastructure. XT is the old toolkit that, for instance, GhostView or XPDF or XFIG use, and it's not accessible at all. Applications which draw things themselves are not accessible, of course, because, well, they would have to just provide the text and the structure, just like what Acrobat Reader does, actually. In practice, those applications which were supposed to be accessible are not so much accessible. So, for instance, in the console, I still have my Braille device. Yes. Alza Mixer poses, well, a few problems in that it exposes vertical things, which is not really nice for Braille devices. You would prefer horizontal things. On the graphical side, well, usually the problem is that you have a mess of widgets. For instance, here you have labels, three labels and three text boxes. And the label relates to the text box, but maybe you have first laid out the labels and then put the text boxes. And so it's a bit of a mess, and the screen reader cannot know that they are related. So that's why people write scripts for each application to relate them together. Instead, you should just use a labeled text box so that right from the start they are related together. So just a few things I've already told about this morning. Just design your application without thinking about graphical things. Always provide equivalence. Text equivalence. For instance, you can share the libraries between text and graphical. For text applications, put the cursor in the same place so that you can guide the screen reader. Take user suggestions into consideration when they say it would be useful to have this, then think about it, really. And if you're crazy in RTS, test it yourself, be it with GNOME Terminal and BraveTTY for console applications, Accessizer for the graphical ones, and GNOME Orca to just try yourself. It's not really easy. You have to learn quite a bit. Now, I would like to talk about bootstrapping. It's more perspectives than existing solutions, and I'm mostly thinking aloud. So you enter a cybercafe and you want to use the computers there. How to access them? What should be quite easy is automatic detection. Like you have your USB Braille device, you just plug it in, the system recognizes it's a Braille device and starts the screen reader. This should be relatively easy. Ubuntu does this. It has posed some problems because some devices advertise them as a serial port, a generic serial port, and so it poses problem with the real serial ports, which are not Braille devices. But well, there are some shortcuts that can be useful, for instance, for people who have problems with the keyboard. There are some shortcuts to enable some keyboard feature. Compiz has an integrated zoom feature, which is quite easy to just trigger on any desktop. My question is, well, it would be great to have a standard standard shortcut that enables speech synthesis that would work on any distribution that hasn't appeared yet. This was mostly for blind people and some keyboard problems. Well, ideally, you should have an accessibility panel which presents all the options that you would want to enable, disable, etc. The problem is that this panel needs to be accessible itself. A way we might think of is just a USB key with a config file on it, like at the root of the file system, and you plug it in, and when the system sees that config file, it says, okay, that's an accessibility configuration, I will apply the option that are described, and then automatically the computer starts acting like the user would like. Another aspect which is quite related, you have a brand new computer and you want to install Linux on it, of course. That's just the same issues and potential solutions. Nowadays, what is happening mostly is that people have accessible versions of installation CDs. For instance, that they start speech synthesis by default. The problem is that then it's not mainline. In principle, all installation CDs should be accessible, including, for instance, all the Debian forks for different uses, be it Debian Med, be it Debian Multimedia, etc. There's no reason that it should be a separate CD that is just for people who need it. I'll talk a bit about Debian. What we have now already is USB Braille auto detection, so that somebody who has a USB Braille device can just be alone. His computer crashes, he has to reinstall, not a problem. He just uses his CD standard downloaded from the internet, or asks somebody to burn it for him, or just use the one he has in his library. And then he can install Debian again or restore something on the system. You can enable high contrast or hardware speech by hand. There's no software speech synthesis yet for space reasons, sound driver reasons, a lot of things, but well, we hope to eventually manage to get this on the standard CD set. That would be really great. But then there's a problem of the BIOS. How can you make your CD boot? BIOSes are mostly non-accessible, except a few old ISA cards which can just read the video memory and then get the text from there. On servers, you have the serial port support, which is useful for professionals, so then it's accessible. Well, maybe we could think about EFI to have accessibility modules that you could load or something like this. I'm not really into the standard, the EFI standard, but that could be something to have a look at. And eventually, the bootloader, mostly they are not accessible nowadays, but they are improving. What they usually have is a beep to say that, yes, you are at the menu, I can accept the keys to change the item that should be booted. You have quite often keyboard shortcuts to quickly select the one you want. Well, things I'm thinking out right now, and I've been talking with Grub people already, is some beeps to tell that, yes, you have selected this one, that one. Maybe just pre-synthesize some awk file, since you have a configuration file, but you know what Grub will need to say, so you just do the speech synthesis in advance, and then at boot, the bootloader just needs to have sound drivers and play the awk file. Well, sound drivers seems a bit crazy, but well, why not? You could even want to ship a whole screen reader in the core. From the point of view of Grub people, it's actually just another alternative terminal. It's just that it's synchronized with the actual screen. That's something we have told together with them. And yes, the synchronization part is already implemented, so it's now just about drivers. So to conclude, accessibility features are a bit convoluted. It's not the standard way of propagating information. That standard way was invented by sighted people who had both hands and could hear, etc. So that's why, yes, it's out of the standard. But anyway, it cannot be standard, since you never know what people would need to be able to use the software and hardware. So you have to find ways. From my experience, all this is not really technical issues. It's mostly integration issues. So, for instance, if you have a look at the Debian boot and Debian accessibility mailing list, you'll see that there were some periods with really a lot of mails, just because they were talking to each other and finding a solution to integrate things properly. Thanks. Are there questions?
Is there any standard for accessibility in protocols used for Braille, tablet, or anything else?
You mean like the same protocol for each Braille device? The one on the serial port? There is none. Well, actually, there is something like a fight between manufacturers about it. There are some compatibilities. Some devices can emulate other protocols. It's a bit of a mess, actually. There are like 20 drivers in Braille-T2i, I think, to support like 40 or 50 different kinds of devices. One thing we did, however, is defining a client-server way of displaying Braille and getting key presses that is used between Braille-T2i and Orca, for instance. Orca doesn't have Braille drivers, it just talks with Braille-T2i to actually render things on the Braille device. But for now it's just used for software. Maybe with free Braille devices we would use free and open protocols for this. That would be great.
I remember reading something on the kernel mailing list where you were asking something I don't remember, and somebody replied basically that blind people didn't code anything or something like that. Do you often get this kind of crazy answers where, for instance, you go to talk to the Omix maintainer and tell him put the cursor at this place because it's better for blind people? Do they agree, or is it difficult to convince them?
The thing is, you shouldn't hurt the sighted way. If you do not hurt the sighted way, then they are more keen on modifying things. Like, if it's an option, then it's usually fine. The problem is that then you have to enable the option, and that's a pain for users. In the MUT and Omix case, actually they enabled it by default because they realized that they can hide the cursor so it doesn't hurt the sighted way. And for instance, we submitted a patch to the Linux kernel for make menu config, and they just applied it immediately. They didn't even ask. Thanks.